Epilogue. New York City, New York, April 30th, 1789, 2 p.m. George Washington raises his right hand. Since dawn, thousands have crowded around the Federal Building in Lower Manhattan, eager to witness the swearing-in of America's first president. Washington is in plain view, standing on the second-floor balcony overlooking Wall Street. His hair is powdered white for the occasion, and he wears a brown suit, white silk stockings, and shoes with silver buckles. A ceremonial sword hangs down at his hip. Washington's left hand rests on a Bible opened to the book of Genesis. Robert Livingston, the Chancellor of New York, stands opposite him, ready to administer the oath of office. Footnote. The 37 words for the presidential oath of office, which have been used to swear in every American president since Washington, are written into the U.S. Constitution. They were penned in 1787 by delegates to the Constitutional Convention. End footnote. Do you solemnly swear that you will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of your ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States? George Washington is a restless man, one who quickly grew bored of his retirement in Mount Vernon. In the years immediately following the war, he traveled into the American wilderness, revisiting lands he initially surveyed more than 30 years before. As befitting a man who had labored so diligently to forge the United States of America, Washington closely followed the actions of the Congress. In May 1787, he traveled to Philadelphia to represent Virginia at what would become known as the Constitutional Convention. The meetings took place inside the same room of the Pennsylvania State House where the Declaration of Independence had been approved, and where Washington once accepted his commission as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. The familiarity of the surroundings was reinforced by Washington's reunion with Alexander Hamilton, a growing force in national politics, and with Benjamin Franklin, now returned from Paris. Footnote. Thomas Jefferson took over Franklin's role as Minister to France. Alexander Hamilton was appointed to Congress, representing New York. End footnote. Much to Washington's surprise, he was elected president of the convention. The delegates met throughout the summer. Washington's leadership was evident to all. He kept the group on task despite several polarizing arguments that could have derailed the proceedings. The result was a document that reinvented the nascent American government, adding a second body to the Congress, establishing a judicial branch, and creating a role for a single individual to act as formal head of state. As with his wartime service, Washington was proud of his role in helping to create the U.S. Constitution. All the while, George Washington was deeply in debt and struggling to pay the bills for his Mount Vernon estate. The time had come to restore a measure of financial stability for himself and Martha by concentrating on making a profit from his plantation. Then, in September 1788, Alexander Hamilton wrote Washington imploring him to take part in the election of America's first chief executive, which was to take place between December 15, 1788 and January 10, 1789. "If I should receive the appointment," Washington replied to Hamilton with dismay, "the acceptance would be attended with more diffidence and reluctance than I ever experienced before in my life." In the end, however, Washington did allow his name to be placed on the ballot along with those of 7 other men: John Adams, John Hancock, John Jay, John Rutledge, Samuel Huntington, Benjamin Lincoln, and New York Governor George Clinton. The people voted overwhelmingly for Washington. John Adams came in second and thus won the job of vice president. The Electoral College, another byproduct of the Constitution, showed its approval of Washington by a unanimous vote. Footnote. The popular vote had strict rules. Only landowners over the age of 21 could cast a ballot. In some states, only certain Protestant denominations could vote, and everywhere, women, immigrants, servants, and slaves were prohibited from taking part. Out of a U.S. population of nearly 4 million, it is estimated that fewer than 44,000 Americans voted in the first election. End footnote. It was not until April 14th that a horseman galloped to Mount Vernon to inform the general of his victory. 2 days later, George Washington set out for New York, this time to lead his nation. "I do solemnly swear," Washington states, repeating the oath back to Chancellor Livingston, "that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States." Washington pauses before adding, "So help me God." He then bends over the Bible and kisses its pages. "It is done," Livingston announces to the crowd. "Long live George Washington, President of the United States." As the crowd cheers lustily, 13 cannon are fired in the distance. America has its first president. The destiny of the Republic is underway.